All callers are muted.
Okay, there we go. Starting right on the air with all callers are muted. This is Winfrey, and we're early today. We're here for the Monday night conference line. And I don't know if that's really the best name for it, but that's what we started out calling it, so we're still calling it that. It started out not as a show on BBS, but it started out as a conference call. And the idea was that I was having all these kind of communications and conversations with what identified itself as Group Souls. We're on the air, so when you hear those little beeps, that means people are coming in. I'll check later and see who's on the call. And I found out something unique about Group Souls, or how the other dimensions work, and that is that they have the ability, the positive sources in other dimensions, to kind of bleed through into this dimension. Actually, now it's hard to imagine how they are, because they're energy. They're pure energy. And what is pure energy? We're pure energy, and we can't even see our energy. Most of us don't know we're energy, or we don't feel like energy. But at some point, we start as energy. And the energy kind of downloads into a physical body. We're on the air, so we got on early. For a long time, we didn't start till 6, so everyone that's on the conference call is coming in a little late. And so we are energy. We are energy in the matrix. We say that over and over again. But it's good to say it because on this call, many people have had the experience of how it feels, how their energy feels, and how it feels to feel energy from other dimensions as it bleeds into this dimension. And so we hope if anyone's listening for the first time that they will relax and still, and maybe they will have this experience, okay, of how it feels. Now I'm going to, let's see, we haven't officially started. It's 5:59. Just a little bit of background is that I'm the author of the book, the principal author with David Wilcock of the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And prior to writing this book, this whole idea that I'm talking about here was totally foreign to me. The idea of how the intelligence worked on the other side of the veil, because we have a veil and we can't see anything through it. How does it work, and how does it connect with us, and how can we utilize it? Well, as I studied David Wilcock writing the book, I learned that the voice that was speaking through him, the source that he had, was one of these group souls. It was a huge group soul that identified itself as the Ra group, and they spread out through the galaxy. Now, how can you imagine that? A group soul that spread out through the galaxy. Its energy spread out through the galaxy. And then at one point they said they would connect with David like an amoeba just morphing its body into his space. I thought about that. How would that feel if they were doing that with me? And so I started reading the channelings with my friend Terry, and as we read them out loud, we felt a shift in the energy. And we kept monitoring it, and we started to think, maybe that's them. Maybe they're moving into our space. Well, that little experience evolved and evolved and evolved, and of course, I ended up having many, many conversations, still having conversations, with this voice that identifies itself as the Rock Group. And we've been learning how to feel them when they morph is not the right word, as they kind of extend their energy into your space. Now, they honor free will, which means they're not going to extend their energy unless you're open to it. And if you're checking in for the first time, I would suggest that you should not be open to it. You should be checking us out, feeling this out, making sure it feels positive, making sure it has a resonance to your conscious mind. But because something has an energy that can move into your space, does not mean it's positive. There are negative energies in other realms, and it's up to everyone to carefully discern anything, anyone that says anything like I just said, so that they can make their own evaluation and scrutiny of whether an energy feels comfortable or not. And one of the things about positive energies is they always honor free will. They don't create fear. They don't try to control you and say, if you don't do this, we're going to get your first board or something like that. Whoever said that was not these guys, okay? That was someone else. And so pay attention carefully anytime to any channeling as to what is the agenda of the intelligence who is communicating. Now, this is all very tricky because the person who's channeling, sometimes they get their agenda mixed up, and maybe they're having a fairly pure source, but then they screw it up because they go on a messiah trip or an ego trip or something. And so it's very tricky to figure these things out. I'm just saying that. But those of us who have been on this call for repeatedly have learned to identify those energies and come to their conclusions about it. And so that's why I say if you're on for the first time, be open, but don't jump until you get a resonance. Did I hear Terry on the line?
Yes, you do.
I thought I heard you. Are you chewing?
No.
You're not eating dinner?
No.
Okay. You know what? We got onto the conference, onto BBS early, and the conference line was muted. So I'm just going to open it up and let everyone say hello to everybody. Hang on a second.
All callers are unmuted.
Now, do we have people on this line?
Yes.
Yeah, we go. BBS people, we don't hear you if we say yes. How many people are there?
There are 15 participants in the conference.
15 people. All right. Okay. Now, I said last week I was going to talk about something this week. Okay. I better mute you guys.
All callers are muted.
And what is it that everybody here is like a super expert on? Because we've done it thousands of times, and yet if we try to talk about it, we don't know a thing about it. Wait a second. Who doesn't remember what I was going to talk about last week? I'll open up the mics again. Yeah.
All callers are unmuted.
Did you guys hear the question?
No.
What are we all what are we all super experts on? Because we've done it thousands of times, and yet we can't even say hardly two words about it with any sense of knowledge. Anybody know? Okay. I'll take that as a guess. Give up.
All callers are muted.
Okay. What we're all experts on, because we've done it thousands of times, is dying. Except since we can't remember, we have not a clue in this realm what it's like, how it feels, why it happens. And so we're scared of it, okay? And so one of the things that I said I was going to do last week was talk about dying and death this time. And And with Terry's graciousness, maybe we'll be able to get some understandings from these guys that are on the other side of the veil that are watching us go through all this and probably helping us when they can, and we can see a little bit how it works. And again, like whatever we're dealing with channel material, whenever that's so, always don't just believe it blindly. Let it resonate. Let it sink in. But it seems like we're usually getting pretty good information. Now, regarding coming back for thousands of times and reincarnation, I know that I've asked a number of questions about this, and of course, I am absolutely sure that reincarnation is the way it works. And I am sure, because of too much personal experience that I've had, and maybe it's worthwhile just to give a couple of pieces of my personal experience so that if you happen to be skeptical or if someone's listening is skeptical, it might predispose you to consider that reincarnation is the way it works. And it started out when I was in college and I read Edgar Cayce. And anyone who's read Edgar Cayce knows that he was the most credible psychic prophet in the history of the Western world. And he could diagnose illnesses, he could do all kinds of amazing things that could be validated. Not just say things, but, you know, he would diagnose somebody, he would go to the doctor, and they would have exactly what he said they would have. And they'd have the blood pressure, he would say. Then he, you know. He did 15,000 of these readings, and he was so precise that if you read him, you'll say he had to have something going for him. And of course, those of you that have read my book know that Edgar Cayce, according to all the stuff that I'm putting out, was channeling this group soul that we're talking about, the Rod Rope, and as is David Wilcock. So when Cayce was looking for information, his high self was connected to the Rod Group, and they would just go out and find stuff. They'd have probably lots of them working together and bringing it back to Edgar Cayce, and then he would say it in a trance. And he was accessing probably loads and loads of individual spirits who were helping him get the information. Also accessing things not just from present time, but the ability to go back indefinitely in the history to see what things worked for people, maybe back in Atlantis or Lemuria. So he had access to all of that. And he was very impressive, and anyone who studies him will have to come to the conclusion that he couldn't possibly do that out of his conscious mind. And then, 20 years into doing those kind of readings, he was starting to tell people who they were in their past lives. And although that was not nearly as easy to validate, there were a number of correlations that would come through. Like, for example, somebody would ask about their child, and he might say they were a musical prodigy without knowing they were a musical prodigy this lifetime. Or the child would have some weird characteristic that was reminiscent of the lifetime that was their previous life. So Edgar Cayce made me think that if he was right about so many things, maybe he was right about reincarnation. And then I had the experience where through a period of time where I was playing music and traveling around the country and sleeping in people's living rooms and playing in coffee houses, I had a reading from someone that allegedly could read past lives, and he told me this long story of a past life I had had as a troubadour and that I was duplicating many of those patterns this lifetime. And in the story, he gave me a lot of detail, and I realized after he gave me the reading that I had written a song that described exactly the same story, or very close to it, probably six years before he gave me the reading, and with details that were just far too close to be coincidental. So I had to decide that when I wrote the song, I kind of tapped in to that past lifetime, and that when he gave me the reading, and I putting the song and the reading together fairly well convinced me that reincarnation was real, and there was no way that he could have given me the reading and I could have written the song and they would have told the same story. And then, of course, you know, years later, I end up writing the book on David Wilcock and Edgar Casey, and there's all the pictures comparing Wilcock and Casey. And most people that read the book, particularly if they see the pictures, are pretty convinced that reincarnation has to be real, because there's billions of what odds that that should be occurring. So the way that I understand it is we have this energy body that's a hologram connected to our physical body, and when we die, somehow or another, we go back to our energy body. Ra, through Carla Rucker, calls the distinction space-time and time-space. We are in space-time when we are in this realm. And I think she says we're in space-time, we can move in space, but we're fixed in time. We can't move in time. In time-space, we can move in time, but we can't move in space. Something like that. In any case, obviously, death is going to be different depending on who you are and how you've established yourself in time-space. And those of you that have been on this call regularly have learned to feel the energy of time-space. And it's hard to explain because it's, somebody has never felt it. You're describing a language that they have no parallels to connect with it. But let's just say on this call, part of us all go into time-space. We feel the energy of time-space. And we can't become one in our spirits. We can't commune without being in time-space. And so although we can't experience what it's like with our senses to be in time-space, there are sensations and feelings that we do experience, and we know we're in time-space, and we all know when that's happening, because on some level that there's no vocabulary for, we all feel each other. We know we're feeling each other. We feel the energy of each other. And we feel this energy flowing into our space, and that's the energies that I am thinking or defining or calling or identifying as the energy of these group souls. And so the big deal is when we die, what is that transition like? How does it feel? How do we have the best death? How do we, what does it feel like if they can tell us to be on the other side? How important is hospice work? How important is the moment of death and how loved you are? Those are questions that I'm going to bring up today, and maybe we'll get answers. If we don't, I'll have to change the topic because I can't answer them. But if we get answers, it'll be really helpful, because the way they look at it, you know, try to imagine how it is to be the Ra group or the Elohim group. They don't have an experience of time, or a very slight experience. One time they said when they join with us, in the moments they're with us, they're experiencing how we feel. So they're in our time. So they're moving in and out of time. And one of the channelings, the Elohim said, they move in and out of time like a swimming pool, like we jump in and out of a swimming pool. So when they jump in and we feel feel them. Some, you know, just even when I start talking about them, I can feel them all around me. And some of you that have been tuned in, I suspect you're feeling them also. And so they need anchors, though. They need someone down here to create a reference point so that they can move into this realm energetically. And so all of you are reference points, are anchors for their energy. And I suspect, we'll ask this question, I suspect that when you've learned to feel that energy in your space and you get familiar and comfortable with it, that when you die, that connection stays. And I would guess that you would have a better experience of the other side, having made that vibrational connection on this side. But that's just me guessing, and I don't know. So, Jerry, are you in a good mood?
I'm in a good mood, a little tired, but in a good mood.
Do you feel like we can tackle this? Shall we try?
We can give it a try.
We'll give it a try. I'll call in the light. And, you know, when we call in the light, I want you to know that what calling in of the light is not a magic set of words. It's creating an intent. And those of you that experience the energy when I do that can learn to duplicate that intent and have the experience of them coming in, particularly if you have someone else to do it with. You know, if you can break the flow of the personality interchange, which for some people that's impossible to do because you have a pre-existing way of relating, and if you did something like this, they would think you were the biggest wacko in the world. But if there's someone who is near you, that's coming in on the line, or someone even you can call, you'll find that you can have a high intent and make that energy come in for you. And that's a very good thing to learn, that it's not about me, it's about us, it's about you. And it's also good to remember that when you start calling that energy, to make sure not only do you have a high intent, but you have a high positive intent. Because as soon as you start opening yourself up interdimensionally, you're also opening up to the negative in other realms. And for some people, they can't do this kind of openness unless they're with someone else to hold the energy for them, because maybe in past lifetimes, they've had a track record with the negative, and so when they start opening up, they're too vulnerable to the negative. And even when they don't want it, and even when they ask for otherwise, the negative will kind of come in on the openness, and then the person has to be very strong to get rid of them at that point. So this is not recommended necessarily for everyone to do. And if you have that experience, it's better to back off and just hold your matrix at a lower level and strengthen yourself. And do it when others are present, because they can then help extend protection for you. So it's an intention, and we're just saying the words of the intention and moving through things so they happen. And really, this is just something I learned, in kind of making the correlation between channeling and somebody channeling to me and understanding that I was actually feeling these group souls in my space was quite a leap of understanding. And then doing it on the conference call and calling them in, saying, I wonder if other people will feel this, finding out that it did work. That I could call on them and they would visit everyone that was open to it. So they're visiting us now. I can feel their energy, and some of you can. And I think we'll go through the poem, Hit on the Light, and ask some of these questions. And maybe I will let you on the line, if we have time, if anyone comes up with an important question and wants to ask it, we'll open the line up and let you do it. Now, this is not for BBS. This is not for BBS radio. You guys are just audiences. This is for the people that have been on the conference line regularly. And if you're on BBS and you do feel the energy and you do want to be on the call, it's just have to ask for our number and email suzanne@higher-vision.org and she'll send you the access number. Tell her a couple of things about yourself, because we want to keep the energy positive. And it's not a discussion group. That's something else. This is like an anchoring of group energy on a line. And that it's a rather important exercise, because not only are we bringing in these energies, we're anchoring them to the earth, and we're part of the changing of the vibration on the planet itself. So Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here. And any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of our galaxy, through our solar system, and through our bodies, and to the center of the earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy. We invoke a blending of all of our energies that are not in space-time, but are in time-space, an intermingling of our energies. And unlike the physical realm, where energies are very specific and in a form, the energies in other realms are not in a form. They're very transparent. So when we talk to those energies in other realms and bring them together, they can actually do that. And now we invite those group souls, those positive group souls, service to other, to join with our energies, the energies we've created. And we take a huge conglomerate of light and we hold it for the rest of this call. And some of you, if you shut your eyes, you'll see those flashing lights in your eyes. You'll see little flecks, what looks like little flecks on the wall. And that's an indication that we are joined in our spaces. So on that note, do we have a source present that would like to talk to us?
Yes.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Yes, this section of the rock. The
and,
team is also standing by.
Okay, and are you following along on what I've been talking about?
Yes.
Okay, let me do a little challenge. It was recommended to do a challenge, and that is, do you honor the law of one?
Yes.
And are you service to others?
Definitely.
And are you in the Christed energy? So, would you like to give an opening preamble to this topic that I brought up?
Yes. The topic which you have brought up is the subject of death. What is death? And should one be afraid of it?
To begin, this conference will now be recorded.
Sorry.
There is a continuation of energy of the soul consciousness. It passes from one focus point to to another focus point. While one is on the earth plane, the consciousness is focused through the body. Some people, it is not as connected with the body as other people. Some people are very grounded, and some people are not as grounded. But the body acts as an antenna to bring and converge the consciousness of the individual and focus it through his body to the surroundings and help him interact. It is a point from which he can interact from. The passing over is the letting go of the focus on that body and moving off the body. Now one, as they do this, may then stay focused within the confines of this realm. In such circumstance, they would not have a body, but they would have an energy, which is themselves within this realm, that would be interacting with this realm as if they did have a body. It also might be interacting with this realm with different talents that they could then experience this realm in, the realm of floating. They could float. They could intend themselves from one place to another. They could astral travel easier.
When an entity does that, is that a ghost? Is that what we're describing?
A ghost would be the entity that maintains his bodily form and interacts with his surroundings as if he still had his full body. He then would oftentimes interact with the environment. As the environment shifted, he may get angry because he wants the original environment that he lived in. There are other states of consciousness where the individual may show up. After he dies, he may come back and visit. He may have a more diffuse energy as he comes back. He may come back to say hello. And we would not call this a ghost. A ghost would be the more focalized embodiment of the person's energy as it existed when he was alive in this plane. And he then would attempt to interact with others from his focalized consciousness. That would be the full ghost. Do you have other questions?
When one dies, or when the body drops, their energy can go to the astral, or it can go past the astral, or it can go to the light, as some people describe it, near-death experiences. Could you explain what determines where the energy goes? And
it is the person's intention, attention, that determines where grow and his connection with other people who have passed over who are in connection with him. They may ease his path over into the light.
Well, is there a positive or negative to being in the going to the astral and hanging up there as opposed to going into the light?
It is all where the person is ready to go. And this can be influenced by the circumstances of death. If he dies in a very traumatic way where he was attempting to do something, then this may keep him within this realm to attempt to complete whatever he was trying to do.
How about if a person who lived a very loving life, and his heart was open more than half, which was the criteria for graduation, how about a person that had a very frightened death? How would that impact their future?
The individual who has the very traumatic death would have some aspect within his consciousness that would have integrated himself into that experience. And by thus moving into this experience based on some spark or connection to the traumatic experience within his own karma or his own past, it would slide him into the experience, and it would be the thing that was needed for him to grow, to magnify and intensify that spark until he could get a good look at it and come to grips with it. So if you have somebody with a loving heart but has a spark of karma waiting there to be ignited, then he may thus connect up with circumstances which were in sync with that spark of karma that he needed to express. And the two, what is done to him and what is in his karma track, then lock geometries and bring that in on him. If he was in a totally loving space, then, and he experienced a really traumatic death, he probably would be able to slide through the experience without it catching and locking within his own sphere, and it wouldn't read or it wouldn't grip him, as he wouldn't have anything within himself to hold that trauma to him and let it work on him. Does that make sense?
I think so. I might have to listen to it back. Is it possible a moment of fear could cause a person to go align themselves with the wrong group when they're in the midst of graduation?
If the person within his own focalized point is open heart, has an open heart greater than 50%, then the moment of fear will be a passing thing, and he would be welcomed into the higher astral and guided through.
Do the Ra group and Elohim groups pay attention to when people are dying so they can surround them with helpers or angelic forces?
It depends entirely upon how the person is asking. If a person is rejecting, if a person is asking for a negative experience, the free will clause would then come into effect, and we could only stand by and not interact with him.
If a person was very angry at the world and very disgusted with everything, and they still asked for help, would their request be kind of a little bit mitigated because of all their anger and contempt?
It would depend upon their ultimate asking. If they were asking in spite of their anger, they would be taken like an angry child and comforted and would be, to the extent of their willingness, to be guided.
Do the negative forces also have access to this process until we die?
Yes. There is the force of Lucifer, who has, you might call it, a corral for individuals who are asking for a negative experience and wish to experience a release within the negative realm, who have been so frustrated in not able to break through in a positive way that they just, it's like a bull trying to break down the fence rather than to go around and find the correct gate that leads out of the maze. Individual who is very angry may ask for a negative experience just because he wants to break down the fence and eliminate the frustrations, and he doesn't know how else to do it. And so there are guides within the Luciferian realm that will take him in tow and work with him.
Now, I would assume that unlike the religious point of view of hell and Lucifer, this is not necessarily a permanent lodging place for someone. They have the option to go through that and move somewhere else.
One always has the option.
Yeah.
One always has the option to move. However, in the Luciferian realm, where there is not always regard for free will, one might be captured and find it harder to break through and break free of that.
Okay.
It's always possible. It depends upon the person's will, and when he has learned his lesson, may become bored with the Luciferian realm and its traps and trickeries and move out of it. and realize that the only true connection of heartfelt gratification is honoring of free will and through the love light connection.
Can somebody reincarnate from that realm and still be connected to it, well, in a physical body?
Yes.
And that's
it is a little harder to incarnate out of that realm, as the magnetic forces tend to attract one within it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when somebody is going through a death process and they're sick, what's the effect of having loving people around them or hospice workers as opposed to not?
Oh, this is really the ideal situation, because the love light that the hospice workers can give, just a smile, just a touch, can ease one's fears and help him connect with the love light of the higher realms. It helps make a congruence with the higher realms, a sliding into without butchers. So this would be ideal to bring love light to the individual. And oftentimes these individuals are hard to bring love light to because they hurt and they tend to be cranky, and then one tends to be cranky back. Like if he's mean to me, I'm going to be mean back. But if one can bring a smile, a little flower, a little joy, a little joke, then this will help immensely and go a long, long way.
Thank you. So when a being is in between lifetimes, in between incarnations, how conscious are they? And can we understand how it would feel to be conscious in that space?
It has a whole range of different consciousnesses. If his intention and his attention and intention are stuck in some situation from the past that he can't let go of, that is there that his focus will be. If he moves with the situation, his consciousness may move and he can astral travel and he can see other people, or he can move through the dimensions and move to the higher planes. Depends on the consciousness of the individual. He may, for a time, disassemble and become the flowers, the trees, and then be stimulated later on to reassemble and refocus his energy. Mm-hmm. He may become the storm and rage across the ocean. He may become the wind and then later on assemble. It depends entirely upon the individual.
Thank you. Perhaps it would be okay, if it's okay with you, to let the Elohim answer a question as to how from their vantage point, they work with someone who is on the other side. I know there's Elohim souls that go back and forth. And is that okay to ask them for that, to answer that?
Yes, give us a minute. There are certain souls that have come from the Elohim, well, from the group soul of the Elohim. And these souls are very light, quick. They tend to be intelligent, to grasp things easily. When one of those souls who has had a body incarnation passes on, we tend to be a little sad because in the realm of the earth plane, they have taken on a personality based upon the ways that they have lived and the people they have been around, and have refocused more into the third dimension or third density. And we long for them to regain the fluidity, the dance, the movement, the creativity, the joy, the love that they had when they first were incarnated, when in their first incarnation. And we don't like to see them lose it, as we feel that they are not as much one of us as they had been, as they become personalized. And we are less personalized in the Elohim group. We experience dancing joy and dancing love. Flow in and out of time. And as one becomes personalized, then they, although they have the ability to come back to it, they lose their reference point for doing that often. And we wish we could play together again in the same manner that we played before. That is our own personal, our own look at this, in answer to your question.
Thank you. So, in other words, oftentimes, if an Elohim soul comes into this realm, their first lifetime here is kind of pretty good, and then they get entrenched in the darker connections or the entrapments of the realm. They tend to lose it.
One might say that they look through a glass darkly after having lived in this realm.
Yes.
As they see things from their own focus, and instead of seeing the all-around focus of all that is possible.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. You know, it's time to sign off from BBS at 6:51. And I told people they were going to ask questions, and then I didn't get to them. So maybe we'll continue this topic next week. And if people want to think of questions during the week, they can do so. And if somebody was listening on BBS, ever not on the call, and they want to email me a question, I will consider asking it. You can send it to winfree@yahoo.com, W-Y-N-N-F-R-E-E, at Yahoo. And those of you that are listening and want to find more information about our conference calls, you can go to dimensional-shift.org, and we have a whole calendar of events there. Dimensional-shift.org, and those of you that want to get my book, it's available in all the stores, and it's in Amazon, and it's also on caseysback.com. So thank you. I'd like to ask both group soul energies if they'll stay around so that when people do their light requests, we can have their added connection to our prayers, our positive intents. And that note, we say, yes.
We send our love light to each and every person that is within the range of our voice.
Okay. Thank you so much. I have to get the last word in. If that's okay. Let's say goodbye to everyone on BBS. And let's see.
There are 18 participants in the conference.
We have 18 people in the conference, and I'll open up.